Hello, I'm Oliver Wong.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks.
Every episode, we invite a guest to talk to us about a heat rock, an album that just burns its way into our collective memory. And today, we will be kick-pushing our way back to 2006 to talk about the debut album by Chicago's Lupe Fiasco, Food and Liquor. I swear from here forward, it's nothing right, so here go it. Whisper in the air, it's kind of crowded in here. Wish you care to blow it, she said, yeah. Sunshine, sunshine. You're my moonlight, you're the starry skies above me. When you talk about hip-hop's capital cities, New York and Los Angeles always come up. The Bay gets love, as does Atlanta and New Orleans. But let's not fly over and forget Chicago. It's the city that's given us everything from hip house to footwork to drill, where Common, Kanye, and Chance all emerged from, as well as today's artists in focus, who helped bridge the Chi-Town generation's Lupe Fiasco. This fall marks the 14th anniversary of his magnum opus, Food and Liquor, its title a nod to the urban landscape of his hometown. Its cover image, a compendium of all the myriad influences that, in hindsight, augured a new hip-hop cohort that grew up on comic books and anime, skateboards, and streetwear. That may not seem that notable by today's standards, but in 06, it was far from the norm, and as we can now see in hindsight, Lupe lit the proverbial path that over the next 10 years would help pave the way for where hip-hop would go. In writing about the album on its 10th anniversary, Yo Phillips sagely noted that while Food and Liquor wasn't a paradigm shift, it nudged things in new directions. Or to put it in Phillips' words, quote, "We all can't be the Big Bang that changes the entire world. Some of us are destined to be just the spark," unquote. My mind, my thoughts, my feelings, my experience. Nothing more and nothing less. Yes, F and F.
With no further ado. Lupe Fiasco's Food and Liquor was the album pick of our guest today, director Tiffany Johnson. If you're not up on Tiffany Johnson, where have you been? She's been writing some things, creating some things. She's been directing some things across various networks, Boomerang and the 20s for BET, The Last OG for TBS, Black Monday for Showtime, and the show that I am deeply in love with called Dear White People for Netflix. Needless to say, our paths have crossed. I don't quote Stanley Kubrick often, but he said, a film is or should be more like music than fiction. If that's true, my hope for all of us is that our guest keeps making great music one album at a time. We for sure want to hear and see the world through her lens. Welcome to Heat Rocks, Tiffany Johnson.
Oh, wow. Wow, thank you. What an incredible intro. Thank you.
Welcome to the show. We're glad to have you here. As we often start the show, we have to ask, why Lupe Fiasco and why Food and Liquor?
Yeah, well, let me just start by saying thank you for having me. And the idea to select an album to talk about was not an easy task. And I really wanted to... I really wanted to focus on an album from a specific time in my life, and that was when I started going to film school, which was around the time this album came out. And I knew I wanted to, in making my selection, I wanted to focus on a debut album for some reason. Food and Liquor for me, Lupe, as an artist, that first single, Kick Push, I remember vividly where I was and hearing that for the first time and just... the orchestra sound and the strings, and just, it felt different. It sounded different. And it wasn't like anything really on the radio at that time. And then the album drops and it's just, it was so cinematic in a weird way. Like it just, I remember driving to film school every day, still living in Compton at the time and making that commute to Hollywood, which God bless me for doing that. That was quite a journey. But this was an album that like I played straight, you know, from front to back. And it was, again, I use the word cinematic because it's just like, it was songs that just, he was telling stories. And I just remember being kind of really caught up in that. And it's honestly, it's an album I haven't, I haven't thought about in a while. So when I sat down to do this list and like really think about a specific time in my life, I was like, oh my God, Food and Liquor. Like, how could I have forgotten about this album and how dope it was? And like Lupe just being sort of, you know, new on the scene and coming out very strong with a point of view and a message and very clear in what he was trying to say. And I was like, wow, I think this may be the go. And I was very surprised at you guys that this was one of, you know, the selection. So yeah, that was the way I came about to choosing Lupe Fiasco, Food and Liquor. You knew we couldn't doubt it, couldn't understand it, branded since the first kickflip you landed, labeled a misfit, a bandit, cocoon, cocoon, cocoon.
His neighbors couldn't stand it, so he was banished to the... Morgan, what was your introduction at Lupe?
Definitely Touch the Sky, which I thought as a track was a perfect setup for a star turn. I mean, if you mess up a Just Blaze production and a Curtis Mayfield sample, we just got to start praying for you. But he didn't.
Right. On God, a touche, Lupe, cool as the unthaw, but I still feel possessed as a gun charge to come as correct as a porn star. And the fresh pair of steps and my best phone call. So I represent the first. Now let me end my verse right where the horns are. Like, I gotta testify.
I mean, fire. We had Camo B on the show, and we talked about this album, and we talked about Touch the Sky. That track is just such fire anyway, in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Just the production is so hype. And that was my introduction to Lupe. And I thought, this kid's nice. Like, I've never heard of him before, but I loved his name. I thought his name was cool. You know, it's crazy. I thought his real name was Lupe Fiasco. I didn't even question that. I was like, this is just so legit. It's not, but it's a cool name anyway.
I think I did too, actually. I'm for sure definitely thought that was his real name.
Yeah, see, thank you, Tiffany. I'm not alone out here.
You're welcome.
I was going to say earlier, Tiffany, it's interesting that you kept referring to the sound of Food and Liquor as being cinematic, because I was reading the original Pitchfork review, which I believe was written by one of our former guests, Sean Fennessy, who's now over at The Ringer. But when he reviewed it, he described a lot of the production on the album as score hop, except it wasn't a compliment. He actually had some issues with sort of how the album sounded sonically, which we can or don't need to get into. But regardless, but he is mentioning that, I mean, he's pointing out the fact that a lot of the music on the album does sound cinematic because of just a lot of the kind of orchestral qualities that you were referring to earlier.
For sure.
So I was definitely thinking about that review and the kind of the score hop dig that he was taking. And like Morgan, I think, you know, my introduction to Lupe was certainly through Kanye and was through Late Registration. And I honestly don't recall if Lupe made an instant impression on me based off of that album. But when I heard Kick Push, and certainly when I Gotcha dropped, I just thought, okay, whoever this guy is worth checking for. And I be on my green like Irish Spring, then I coast fudge with it, get a mouthful of soap. You want the aroma? Hey, I gotcha. You want the realness? Well, I gotcha. I know you're sick of them niggas, be current watcher. Either they pimps or they max or they mobsters. You want the real shit?
I also wanted to talk a little bit about Kick Push because it was such an anthem. I'm from LA. I grew up here. And
yeah, same.
I remember seeing a lot of kids, you know, and I go visit my mom, seeing a lot of kids around this time, you know, picking up skateboards. And I thought, this is really cool.
Yeah.
Because at the time, I only knew of a few kids that were skaters. And that was Stevie Williams, because everybody was starting to know him. He had the big Nike endorsement, and Kareem Campbell. But I didn't really know that many other kids. And I think Skate Push just ushered in this whole generation of kids that wanted to skate, you know, and kids from the hood that wanted to skate. I wanted to play a little bit of Lupe's interview where he talks about the behind the scenes tea of the release of this song of Kick Push.
Obviously your first single, Kick Push, skateboarding and things. Before it was acceptable, before every rapper and artist was out there doing that. How tough was that? Because I know you got some backlash and stuff initially from community, people that thought you were just trying to come in and didn't realize it was who you were.
There was like some very insecure skaters, Tony Hawk not being one of them, fortunately. Yeah. You know, who just felt like we were trying to encroach on their territory. When I really did the song as a tribute for a skate shop, it was never supposed to be a single. It was never meant to be a single. It was for a skate shop called Uprise, for a skate DVD. And then it just took a life of its own. But, you know, the backlash from it is what you do. When you're the first through the wall, you always get a little bloody.
So I didn't know that. I thought Kick Push was the single because that's what I heard first. And in hindsight, I'm not surprised that there was a little bit of a push from skateboard culture. That's not surprising at all. But it opened up the door for a whole generation of skateboarders after him, including kids like Boo Johnson, who's from the West Coast, and Samaria Brevard, who's a sister that's doing it as well. So I think goes on to say in the interview that he paved the way for like Lil Wayne to skateboard.
I was just about to say Lil Wayne was not. I mean, this is what maybe the Carter Two is around. Yeah. Like he wasn't kicking and pushing. Yeah. No.
And then all of a sudden he was.
Not at all.
Know? We had Pharrell. Pharrell was Skateboard P, but I think this
Skateboard P.
I think this was just. It was something for kids in the hood to engage in skateboarding, which I really credit Lupe for.
Yeah, and even just the aesthetic and style of hip hop too. Again, just going back to like, it changed even the way like we dressed, and again going into like van, you know, buying Vans, or I mean we always did Chucks and Converse, but like it made it almost so, you know, cool to wear Vans, which was like not a thing, and you were not wearing
right,
Vans.
No.
Nah. So, yeah. And that, I think we all secretly was seeking something, someone to do it first. Like he said, it just kind of pushed through and opened the door for us. And then we all just kind of came through it. I mean, I personally did not get on a skateboard, but I liked the shift in the culture, and I liked the idea of this sort of crossover now into this
100%.
World.
100%.
I'm really glad that we're touching on the skateboard part of it, because part of what I was thinking earlier is that hip hop and skate culture, especially in the 90s, were always rather adjacent to one another. A lot of skate kids I knew were into punk and hip hop, and a lot of hip hop kids I knew were kind of a little bit into skating culture. There wasn't a complete overlap, but it was one of those Venn diagrams where you could find people who were in the middle. But a lot of it to me felt pretty racial at the time, which is that skating culture was so defined by whiteness. So that the Beastie Boys, you know, as early as the early 90s were, you know, they were like the big skater hip hop crossover group, but you didn't really hear or talk or see a lot about black kids skating. And I think that was the key difference with the generation that Lupe Fiasco represented, and as well as you guys were talking about a moment ago, Pharrell Williams and Skateboard P, is that it reminded us that black kids have been skating for decades. It's just no one ever really paid attention to them because all the big stars of skating culture coming out of the 90s were primarily white. And one of the things that Lupe did a couple years ago, this was a reflection on Food and Liquor. When it turned 10 years old, he recorded this hour plus monologue basically about all the different influences that were on there. And let's take a quick listen to how he talks about where he brings in parts of youth culture into that album.
It's very interesting to have, like, to see, like, there's a genuine connection between all of this stuff that's on here, and kind of reflects a lot of the things that I was interested in, you know, different stories about my life and kind of like my generation coming up. And it's very young, I think. Some of it can be somewhat childish and childlike, but I embrace that. I think that's cool.
I think what I find really striking about this clip is how Lupe really embraces the idea that the ways in which he brings in the things that he was into as a kid, he's not embarrassed by this. He's embracing the ability to talk about the things that he liked and loved as a kid. And I think what's so notable here is that it runs very counter, I think, from an older hip hop ethos where kids and teenagers are always trying to front like they're adults. And you certainly saw this when you're talking about actual kid rappers like Shaheem, the Rugged Child from Staten Island, or early Mobb Deep, where their experiences of childhood were always treated as something to be that was embarrassing, and that they, as teenagers, were trying to transcend or avoid associations with being thought of as being young. And I think one of the things that's changed really dramatically over the last 15 years, beginning with Lupe, is that rappers have no problem celebrating their youthfulness. Being young is not a detriment to their brand. Being young is their brand. And I think partly it's because they wanted to stake an identity claim about what separated them from older rappers, and part of what they turned to was their own teen subcultures: skating, comic books, anime.
Sure.
I mean, those are the things that you are not hearing rappers talking about until that generation that began with Lupe. They brought that into it, I think, as a way to distinguish themselves and separate themselves from the Jay-Z's, from the older gen, as to say, this is our turf. This is what we know. And we are unabashedly celebrating the fact that this is what we grew up on, and this is what makes us different than you.
I agree. That's a great point. And it reminds me, too, of this came later, but it reminds me of the Odd Future camp, who also, there was a lot of currency around them being young, too, because the lifestyle was young. It was birthed around Fairfax and Fairfax High School. And they also were skaters, and they also went to anime and cartoons. And so there's a lot to be said for being young now, where I think back in the day, you know, even if we mentioned Bow Wow or Illegal, there was such a thing about being grown and being young, but living this hard life. And now that's changed. And I think Lupe has a lot to do with that. He ushered in. I think he also paved the way for Odd Future to be young and to be weird.
And to be
alternative. And so we got to credit him for that.
And I was just about to say alternative.
For sure.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Even maybe Cudi, I would
Absolutely.
Say, probably, because Cudi came after Lupe and really coming in with an alternative hip hop sound, right?
Right.
That I think, Lupe definitely kind of, again, opened that door.
If you look at the artwork for Day and Night, Cudi's Day and Night, it looks a lot like the cover of Food and Liquor, except
Food and Liquor,
right?
Yeah.
Except Cudi's got on the space helmet, right? But he's got a lot of objects floating behind. The colors almost similar or the same. So I think your point, Tiffany, is a good one, that he certainly opened the door for that.
This is a much longer conversation, but at some point we really do need to unpack whatever alternative hip hop means. Like, what is the alternative part, and alternative to what? Because I'm thinking back in the 90s, alternative hip hop meant Arrested Development. It meant the Fugees to a lesser extent. But those groups sonically don't sound like Odd Future. They don't sound like Lupe or the kind of early 00s, or I guess the 2010s version of alternative. So it's, you know, alternative is kind of this very vague label that I think we kind of intuitively understand what it means or what it references. But it's, if you really think about it, it's rather ill-defined, because there's not like a constant to what that is. I think to me what alternative is instead of rappers rapping about, you know, their Gucci shoes, they're now rapping about their Hypebeast sneakers that they got from Supreme off of Fairfax because they waited in line to cop like the limited edition Yeezys. That's the alternative part, is that it replaces one kind of material object with another. But that replacement is not insignificant, because it represents, I think, a whole different world that you're brought into, which is, again, some of the things that you hear across Food and Liquor.
Yeah, that's a great, I think you're right. I would almost say maybe alternative for me, I think about the sound itself, and maybe the instruments that are used and play, like, you know, again, going back to Lupe using an orchestra sort of sound and strings and like these sort of elements, to me kind of made it's different than what normally hip hop is. More bass heavy, you know, it's less about the beat and more about just a sound, if that makes any sense. I don't know, but yeah, you're right. I think the alternative is a big word to unpack and break it down to what it really means, or how to really define it in terms of hip hop. But that, I think when I think about alternative hip hop, I think about just this, even with Cudi and Day and Night and like the sound, you know, the samples in that, like that feels against the grain of what a traditional hip hop sound is,
right?
In a way.
We talk about a lot of artists that are influenced by Lupe, but one that surprised me was Lil Yachty. And Lil Yachty was shouting him out and shouting him out for being a pioneer of fashion and Japanese culture and hip hop.
Yachty, what's up, brother?
Yo, bro, I just wanted to come in here and talk about how far ahead you are when it comes to fashion. I'm talking 10, 12, 13 years. I don't appreciate how you don't get your respect. See, a nigga
What's
like
up,
me.
Yachty? How are you?
bro, I'm a nigga that really research when it come down to this shit, bro. I'm talking about Ben did the Goyard, Ben did the Fragment. Come on, bro, you need your respect, bro. I don't like that. It's King. Cool. King.
We will be back with more of our conversation with filmmaker Tiffany Johnson after a brief word from some of our sibling Max Fun podcasts. Keep it locked.
Schmanners. Noun. Definition. Rules of etiquette designed not to judge others, but rather to guide ourselves through everyday social situations.
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband, host Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife, host Teresa McElroy.
Every week on Schmanners, we take a look at a topic that has to do with society or manners. We talk about the history of it. We take a look at how it applies to everyday life. And we take some of your questions. And sometimes we do a biography about a really cool person that had an impact on how we view etiquette. So join us every Friday and listen to Schmanners on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
Manners, schmanners. Get it?
Hey, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks.
These are real podcast listeners, not actors. We took the identifying marks off this podcast. Just tell me your impressions.
It's really sexy.
My first thought is like Radiolab?
Definitely something popular.
Yeah, really popular. A hit show.
But funny, too. Like, does Tina Fey have a podcast?
Or the Marx Brothers?
Yeah, is this podcast Radiolab, but hosted by the Marx Brothers?
And sexy, like Sade? It reminds me of Sade.
Exactly, and they're all riding in a BMW.
Close, but not quite. Take a look behind these panels. And then watch this rocket blast off into space.
Whoa.
Ooh. And there's the pies we made you.
Oh.
Now, let's show you the podcast.
Oh. Wow, it was Jordan, Jesse, Go.
Jordan, Jesse, Go?
Hold on.
Oh. Whoa.
Ooh.
Oh, my goodness.
That was 514 J.D. Power & Associates Podcasting Awards.
That was really scary.
But compelling.
I guess I should definitely subscribe to Jordan, Jesse, Go.
Yeah. I'd say so.
Jordan, Jesse, Go. A real podcast.
Yes, and we're back on Heat Rocks talking food and liquor with director Tiffany Johnson.
Tiffany, if I can ask, you're probably, I think, maybe the third filmmaker that we've had on the show. And I'm always curious to know, when you're working on your projects, how much are you thinking about the music that you want to hear within it?
First of all, I love this question. Music is honestly, I think about how it sounds first, actually, before I think about maybe what it looks like. I have to hear it. And anyone who knows me knows I am all about a playlist. I start everything, every project. I'm always like, let me start with a playlist. And that's both in my narrative stuff and also in things that I work on, you know, television wise. Music plays such a pivotal role. It helps. You know, it helps you figure out how it can establish a character in a way. It can kind of, if you give, what is your character listening to, right? Or what is their sort of theme? I'm always thinking about it from that perspective. And just music for me, it going back to, you know, how Lupe, I can see his songs. I kind of can find, I use songs to kind of help me paint scenes sometimes or to help me, to just help me kind of see what the emotion may be even. So music is very crucial. It plays a big role in how I approach a project, how I begin a project. It's I always build a playlist.
I love this idea of the sonic mood board that you use before you start on something new.
You mentioned that you can see this album. This album is cinematic. Which song on the album, would you either direct a music video for or make a film out of?
Oof. Yes. I'm going to have to go with, first of all, Morgan, that's a great question. Thank you so much for asking. I feel like I want to go with Daydreamin'. There's something very odd. There's something very odd about that sample and Jill's. I also love sort of a whimsical, fantastical element. And there's something very whimsy about that song. I feel like it stands out on the album, both just Jill's vocals, but also what the song is about. And again, just that sample is so odd and eerie. It feels genre-y in a way. Like I can make this feel like an uncomfortable sort of world, if that makes any sense.
Now come on everybody, let's make cocaine cool. We need a few more half naked women up in the pool and hold a smack 10 that's all covered in jewels. And can you
but a close second, sorry, wait, because I do there's a backup. I would probably go with maybe Sunshine.
Okay.
Cause that one, there's a love, you know, there's a romance there, and there's a very like, oh, is it Sunshine or maybe it's The Cool? I don't know. Now I'm like going down a tangent in my head of like what would be a great sort of soundtrack for a short or sort of, you know, either one of those songs would be dope.
But there's so many good ones on here. And it's so...
There really are.
The album is so dramatic to me. So I'm not surprised that there's several that you would choose from. I would have thought another track, but okay. Okay.
Oh, wait. What would you have thought?
You know what? I might have thought American Terrorist. I might have thought that one, because that one to me, even if you take away the lyrics and what's being said, it's just so dramatic and it's just got so much. It just packs. I was going to talk about that later as one of my favorites, but that would have been the one. But I'm just a music supervisor. You're a director. But the first thing I thought.
No, but that you're right.
When I heard was like, I was like, what is this? What is this? And so it was very dramatic, cinematic to me. Need to open up a park, just close 10 schools. We don't need them. Can you please call the fire department? They down here marching for freedom. Burn down ATVs, turn ATVs on to teach them and move.
Well, since we just touched on Daydream and talking about the sample, if you all don't mind following me down a little bit of a rabbit hole with this, because I too was very intrigued as to the song and where that very notable sample came from. And I realized that it's quite the rabbit hole here. So, I mean, number one, the song has, I think to me at least, really serious Portishead vibes with Jill Scott filling in with the Beth Gibbons role. And what's notable here, so the track itself was produced by Craig Kalman, who at the time, if I have this right, he was the CEO of Atlantic Records, not some fly-by-night beat maker. He's the person running the label that your album is coming out on, which I think is pretty wild.
Oh, wow.
But the original sample that powers the song is a song called Daydream, recorded in 1970 by the Gunther Kalman Choir. And as best as I can tell, Craig Kalman is not related to Gunther Kalman, but what are the odds that they have the same surname? And maybe it's just a super common German surname. I have no idea, but that seemed really odd. But even that, it goes a little bit deeper, because if you look at the progression of how did one song end up leading to this Lupe Fiasco track, the original version of Daydream was by this Belgium group called the Wallace Collection. That was a song from 1968. Two years later is when the Gunther Kalman Choir covers it.
Daydream, I dream of you amid the flowers for a couple of hours.
And in 2001, the Gunther Kalman version was sampled by the group iMonster for a song entitled Daydreamin' in Blue.
Such a beautiful day.
And that's the song that gets used on Daydreamin' by Lupe Fiasco. So there's like four different songs that are part of the lineage to create this. So the fact that you were struck by the sample of it, that sample has like some deep history going on. I just thought it was worth noting.
Thanks for letting me know, because if I ever try and clear Daydreamin', I know what I'm... I know the drama that's going to unfold. So thanks for right. letting yeah. me know.
Maybe don't sample, place that one. Yeah.
No. Thank you for, in fact, I'm making a note right now. Don't do daydreaming. That sample reminds me a lot of the beginning of another off-sampled song, which is the Moody Blues' Dear Diary. Came out in 1969, British group. I think that was one of their few hits. It was later sampled by Free the Robots in 07, but they added in Les Baxter, they added in Eggs Fugue in D minor, and they added in the Ghetto Boys, right? I also won't be able to clear that one. Then that was sampled by the late, great Capital Steez, to become this song. Like a train.
Illuminati trying to read my mind with an eagle eye. And the haze got me thinking why. We killed Osama and plenty innocent people died. We should see the signs, but we Stevie blind. No disrespect to the man or the legend, but I'm sick and tired.
You can hear that my mind's playing tricks on me. I mean, it's just a collision of a lot of samples. And if you get a chance, Tiffany, or and also anybody else that's listening, to see the video, for this Oof. Song, that's the late and the great Capital Steez of the Pro Era crew. One of my favorite uses of that, but all the roads that it took to get to that reminded me a lot of your Daydreaming in Blue story, mm. Oliver.
Wow. Yeah. I feel like I'm getting a lesson on this podcast as well. And I love it.
Well, bring stuff back to food and liquor. Let's get into this question. What is the fire mm-hmm. track off of this album? Tiffany, what's the song that even today still just gets you hyped?
Ooh, I mean, definitely Kick Push, but I also love Pressure.
Mm.
I love Jay-Z's verse on Pressure. And I love that, like, he really, like sets off that record for me. I also, again, love that, like, intro to that song is, like, nuts. It's so powerful. Those two, I would say, when I crack open the album, I definitely always start with Kick Push. And then when I just want to like turn up, I'll either go to Pressure. And then if I'm a little, you know, feeling in my feelings, I'll go to Daydream or Sunshine. One of the more, you know, you like just a little softer. But that, and then actually another sleeper track that is, when we talk about alternative, really feels alternative, is the instrumental, which was produced by Mike Shinoda, Linkin Park, right?
Yeah.
Mike Shinoda, yeah. Which feels very Linkin Park-ish, that track. But that is a very, to me, one of probably the most alternative tracks on the record, just because it's a very much a hybrid of rock and hip hop, like
for
really
sure.
merged together.
Because at that moment, it might get stolen, and that's the last of the boxes. So we chained yourself to the box of the lock, and then he locked it. Swallowed the combination and then forgot it. As the doctors jotted all down with their pens and pencils, the same ones that took away his voice, just left his instrumental like that.
I'm glad you mentioned Pressure because when I was listening back through this, I had totally forgotten that number one, Jay-Z was on the album, and number two, mm-hmm. that he was one of the executive producers of it, because it doesn't really feel like a Jay-Z project by today's standards, but you know, he was heavily involved with it back then. And to your point, Tiffany, I mean, Jay put together a nice 16, you know, on that cameo tip. So it was kind of a nice reminder, surprise that, oh yeah, Jay was on here, and he actually acquitted himself quite nicely.
So the pen is mighty than the sword, my lord. My first picture was a lineup, now I'm on the Forbes. And I still remain an artiste through these all. If you force my hand, I'll be forced to draw. If the war calls.
Yeah, that's straight up like Just Blaze Light, circa 2002 production right there, just 4 years late. But yeah, that's very much sounds like a Jay-Z from the early 2000s track.
Yeah. And I think, wasn't it also, I'm not sure exactly, was Hove already like kind of retired around this time? So I feel like that was a big deal that he had
right.
Jay on the album too, I think, if I remember correctly.
06 was the year that he unretired. So this was...
Oh, he unretired. There,
right,
it
this
is.
Was part of his comeback year. Yeah, which gotcha. Everyone knew was coming because no one was like, he's going to stop making music. No, no. Maybe he'll take a year or two off, but that's about it. Yeah.
The classic Jay-Z, you know, conspicuous consumption that he has to sneak, you know, sneaking on bars. My first picture was a lineup. Now I'm on Forbes. That's the classic Jay-Z. You know what I'm saying? Who else is saying that? Right.
Yeah.
But my fire track, I'm so conflicted. I mean, but that's so on brand. Okay. Work with me on this. What I kept bumping.
Sure.
Okay. In prep for the chat was the Emperor soundtrack. That one sounded so good in here that I know my neighbor hates me, but I hope she loves the song as a result. That's mm-hmm. the one that I kept bumping because there's a lot of samples on here. We didn't get into all of them, but that UFO sample and how they flipped it up behind the walls is just, that one's precious.
Life was 15 in the clip and one in the hole. Hallway wall full of rips, some of us know, none of us know. The makers of the toast, like the bottom of the stove that was used in the murder and not a scroll. Heart colder than Edie's, won't let the CDC defeat me, rub me out like...
I gotta go with I Gotcha. It was true back in 06. It's still true in 2020. And it struck me that we've actually never, I think, discuss the Neptunes much at all on the show, and we'll have to rectify that at some future point. And the Neptunes only produced this one song on the entire album, but I Gotcha is just, it's so fire to me. I love that they have an accordion in there, it sounds like, and just the kind of propulsiveness and the density and the brightness all combining on this one track. I just love this so much. And it also has my favorite moment, which is just how it begins with that, those four hits.
Oh yeah. Special.
It's a good album. It's such a good album.
Speaking of favorite moments, how about the two of you? Do you all have any favorite moments off of this? Morgan, you want to start?
Well, as you know, I've made the case for the greatness of intros and interludes and skits, but I haven't spent enough time on outros. My favorite moment of the album is the track Outro. Because if you can spend 12 plus minutes thanking everyone in your life that has made this thing possible, and you do it over a sick beat, you had me at hello. So that is my favorite. I mean, it's like an oral representation of liner notes at a time when people weren't checking for them as much. And I love that he remembers. Those are first album dynamics. You remember everybody that put you on. Right. And plus the track is fire. So that would be my favorite. The whole 12 minutes. 13 seconds of that outro is for me the best moment on the album.
Esco, much love goes out to Rita Lee, the Buchanan, Susie's the newsie, everybody that helped this project from day one. Can't forget Bolo, Footloose.
When I first saw the track listing and specifically the time stamps, I just assumed that it was 12 minutes because it was one of those cases where the outro is really just a hidden track. So it had like, you know, 11 minutes of silence and then you finally got to it. But then I realized, no, this is a 12 minute thank you song, to your point, Morgan.
Yes.
And I just thought, I was like, I've never heard anything quite like this before. Though I forget which of the albums it was, but Kanye also has a super duper long outro on one of his first, I think, four LPs. But it's not quite like this, because that's more like Kanye just going off into Kanye land, whereas this is Lupe really just thanking everyone who got him to where he was to be able to make the album, which is very heartfelt. Yeah,
it's so earnest, and the humility. He's shouting out radio. He's shouting out, you know, he's shouting out Vibe.
His
and
barber,
the source.
You know, right.
Miss Jones, Hot 97. Come on now. So that one's precious to me. What about you, Tiffany?
Yeah, I think I touched on it. I go back to that piano drop in Pressure, and just how, just, I mean, I don't know. We're asking, I don't know, Christian, can you play that? No, I'm kidding. Can he play that?
He can play it.
J. Lupe.
Yeah. It gives me chills every time. Just that little like, doom, 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 doom. I don't know. I also like want to see the person that's playing it for some reason. Like, yeah. I don't know. Just like, it's, yeah, that's, but I would also piggyback on the outro. I think I love that he did that. And I love that it's literally a track dedicated to everybody that helped him on this. And
yeah,
you don't see that. They don't do that anymore. Or I don't think people do that at all, actually.
If we can go just real quick back to Pressure for a second, one of the things that I forgot was on there, speaking of moments, is they use the sound effect that you hear in practically every Hollywood movie. I think it's become basically like a sonic meme at this point, which is the sort of hawk screaming sound. And the first time I heard it, I was like, why would they put that in there? It just seems out of place because I only associate it with almost parodic uses in films, just to say, you know, at some point we just got to put the eagle scream in here, so let's just drop it in randomly. And that's the way that it felt on there. But now that I hear it, I'm like, I can roll with it. It still doesn't make a lot of sense to me sonically, but I'm just glad someone thought, like, let's go ahead and put in the eagle scream. I'm sure, you know, why they should have put in like the Wilhelm scream in there as well, just to, you know, for another like Hollywood sonic meme. But I always thought that was kind of a trip just to hear that in there.
Yo, bring back eagle screams alongside interludes and skits. If you ain't got an eagle scream on your album, what are you doing out there? What are you doing with it? What are you doing?
Very true.
So what it needs to be is it needs to be an eagle leaving a voice message on an interlude, and it's just the eagle screaming. That is exactly. All quadrants to hit on
that's
for
it.
Morgan's preferences there.
That's it. Period.
Yeah.
Tiffany, if you had to describe Food and Liquor in three words, what three words would you choose?
Oh, wow. I should have known that. Is this a question that you guys always ask?
It is.
Every time.
It's all good.
I feel like this may be heavy. I'm going to say revolutionary. Mm-hmm. Just for what it did at the time that it came out for the culture. I'm going to say my favorite word that I've been using, cinematic.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I'm going to say there's something also very, I don't know if satirical is the right word, but I love his commentary on hip hop culture at that time, especially I think in Daydreamin', where he really he's really challenging the culture and questioning it or making us, you know, question it at times, especially in Daydreamin', with just the sort of the parody of the music, of the hip hop music video, right? Of what he's saying. And I kind of see that trend in a lot of his songs. Satirical, I guess. Yeah.
This is Ben. Lupe Fiasco's Food and Liquor coming to a close. Peace. Next album, Lupe Fiasco. And much love to you. Cool. If I forgot.
Well, before we jump out of here, we always want to leave our audience with something else to listen to. So, Morgan, what would you recommend that folks put next on their playlist after they finish with Food and Liquor?
I think you got to go to Saba, Bucket List Project. Chicago, you got Chicago Massive on deck. It's indie hip hop, a similar flow. He's got the classic line, "My city, the one that made Lupe cry." So it's, you know, going around in circles. And there's even a Matthew Santos feature. So we're all in the family here. And I think it was a great debut feature that grabbed a lot of acclaim. Saba has said that Lupe's an influence. And I would say start at the beginning. Don't skip nothing. I do think Lupe paved the way for this generation of alternative rappers from Chicago. So I'd start there. Mm. You?
My recommendation would be also out of the Midwest, which is the Cool Kids and their first breakout mixtape, totally flossed out from 2007.
For sure.
Cool Kids is, they're still making music together, Sir Michael Rocks and Chuck English, who, like Lupe, were very much repping for, as we were discussing earlier in the episode, alternative black youth culture. In this case of Cool Kids, instead of skateboards, they were talking about customized BMX bikes. One of their first big hits was Black Mags, which is in reference to to bike culture. And, you know, they're rapping about streetwear and part of that generation bringing that influence into the rap game, as they say. And I think that if, again, I think a lot of the things that Food and Liquor does, the cool kids do as well, but you wouldn't confuse one with the other because sonically they're so distinct, and as rappers they're very distinct. But I still listen to a few of the tracks off of that mixtape today, and it still just bumps for me.
I'm a murder club dope pedal rider. Nigel said I'm good, they get that ink on my bicep. I gets busy as a bee on my bike grips. If I catwalk this sidewalk, I could fly this bitch, and I'm flying, it's tied to the side, that's the flag.
All right, last but not least, Tiffany, what would you recommend be next on the playlist?
I, first of all, love the Cool Kids and the Bake Sale and like their first stuff. Can I continue with Cool Kids and go with the Bake Sale?
Yeah, please go for it.
So I'm gonna piggyback on yours and go with the Cool Kids, the Bake Sale, because that album is nuts. And though they were chucking like, yeah. That's a good one, and thank you for reminding me about that.
So 1-2-1-2 mic check, I'm out for the high end. EQ my steps, I don't use bad grammar, so please excuse this. I'm just trying to let niggas know who I is.
They're so dope.
Come on. Fire.
Yes.
All right. Well, if the Cool Kids, if Michael and Chuck are out there listening, come on Heat Rocks. We want to talk to y'all. So let's try to make that happen.
Absolutely. Or someone talk about the Cool Kids albums.
Either way, that works.
Either way.
That's going to do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, director Tiffany Johnson. Can you let us know what you're working on now and where can people find you out in the social streets?
Yeah, I am. I'm currently working on my first feature, which I'm really excited about. And gearing up to join, come back to a couple TV shows that I've been a part of. You can find me on the Instagram and the Twitter at Tiffany Janelle, J-E-N-E-L-L-E. Tiffany Janelle J, actually, on both Instagram and Twitter.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.